to the 4 p.m.
Everything Under the Sun radio broadcast. Yeah! I thought you were going to take more of it.
That is right.
Yeah!
Can you hear me?
I could hear you, Yesenia. Okay. I could hear you now. I turned your mic up. Make sure you're talking nice and square right into that mic. And as Yesenia was saying, folks, you are tuned in to Everything Under the Sun, the Sopra Sun's weekly radio program right here on KDNK. I'm one of your co-hosts, James Steinler, assistant editor of the Sopra Sun, and I'm joined by...
I'm also one of your co-hosts. I'm Gus Richardson. I am a youth correspondent at Sopra Sun. I'm 17. I'm a senior at Roaring Fork High School.
That's right.
How about you?
I am also a co-host in Everything Under the Sun. My name is Yesenia Benavides. I'm also 17, and I also am a senior at Roaring Fork High School.
Look at that.
Well, we are so glad to have you guys on the Youth News team. Yesenia and Gus, of course, have been with the Sopra Sun Youth News team for more than 2 years now. They started as sophomores, they're seniors today. You've heard them here on the radio. You've seen their bylines in the newspaper. Just very grateful to have them. For today's show on Everything Under the Sun, as we do, we highlight a story in each week's paper, and this week we're going to be talking about leaf peeping, because it is that time of year. I was just up Thompson Creek Road myself, and the leaves are out. They are popping. And so we are talking about reporter Jess Peterson's article on page 11 of this week's Sopra Sun, Follow the Colors, a guide to leaf peeping. And Jess's original source could not join us on the air today with ACEs. And but we have in place, we have Mr. Jim Kravitz. We should have him on the line, who's also with ACEs. Are you there, Jim?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you joining us and filling us in a little bit about the science behind the changing of the colors of the leaves each year. And also, if you can, we might ask you about some of the goings-on over there at ACEs. But to start, can you tell us what your role is at ACEs and how long you've been there?
I am the director of naturalist programs, and I came to ACEs as a naturalist intern in 1995, so I'm getting in on my 30th year here. So happens to be the center of my favorite season. But so I run all the naturalist programs, hire the folks to come into the valley for the summer, and then some stay longer, some quite a bit longer.
Fantastic. And can you tell us why it is your favorite time of year?
I like this time of year just because there's more colors than any other time. I love the temperatures. I love that it's cooling down. It does teach us that when things are slowing down, that's okay, and it can be beautiful. And, gosh, I mean, anybody who's been out this past week knows that I only think you can design better days than we have. So good.
That is very well said, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Yesenia just reminded me, because I referred to it as ACEs, which it's been a common name mentioned. And, you know, I grew up going to Aspen schools in the beginning of my time and then went down valley, but ACEs has always been something that's been there, dare I say, well, it's certainly not taken for granted, but its name has become known as its acronym, ACEs. So, Yesenia, what was your question?
What does ACEs stand for?
that's a good question. It's the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. And Hallam Lake here in Aspen was our original site. We also take care of Rock Bottom Ranch between Basalt and Carbondale, and the Caddo Center at Toklad up the Castle Creek Valley.
Mm. So you all, have certainly expanded over the years.
And I think the primary activity is education from children all the way through adults. We focus on ecological literacy. We focus on food, regenerative food, and we focus on forest health.
So, and in the vein of forest health, do you kind of get a background there for the changing of the leaves? And could you kind of fill us in a little bit behind that science? I know your colleague at ACES, Adam McCurdy, certainly did a good job. And that is, again, on page 11 of this week's Oprah Sun. But if you can kind of fill in our listeners, Jim, about the science behind the changing of the colors.
Yeah, and I think that at the end of each summer season, the day length gets shorter, and photosynthesis slows down, and it becomes a sort of conservation moment where the tree is no longer getting the rewards of photosynthesis from the sun that's out there. And at the same time, the temperatures are getting colder, and we don't have as much water available. And so the tree shuts down for the season. And these are deciduous trees, or trees that lose their leaves. And so that's called leaf senescence, when the leaves are going to be breaking down the really valuable compounds and saving them inside their tissues for the next season. And you are left with pigments that are not as valuable, which have been there the whole time. So the yellows and the reds and the oranges that we see have been there the whole time, but they've been masked by these really valuable pigments like chlorophyll. And those pigments are basically reabsorbed by the tree to be used in their buds and other tissues for future years.
So, may I ask, why would the tree want to have its chlorophyll out in the leaves when the sun's an option? What's the benefit of not having it inside itself all the time?
Well, the basic way that the tree grows, it's a primary producer of energy through photosynthesis, and it has to have its chlorophyll out there in order to do photosynthesis to grow. And the tree has a very short growing season up in the mountains or far north. So a tree with a very short growing season has got to do everything it needs for the entire year, basically between May and this part of September. So it needs to grow roots, it needs to grow taller, it needs to grow wider, it needs to grow new branches, more leaves, just to keep growing and competing with other trees around it. So it's a very much a budgeted time of year of how much growing you can get in the short, maybe 4-5 month growing season.
Does that mean they're pretty much dormant during the winter months? Or are they doing
it? Exactly right.
Okay.
They're dormant during the winter months. The aspen tree is so unique because you notice the color of its bark is white. It actually has green chlorophyll right underneath the bark. So it gets a jump start in the spring to get photosynthesis going. Then it puts out the real solar collectors, which are the leaves. But that one thing that it has, that thin bark, allows the aspen tree to be the most widespread deciduous tree in North America. So it grows in a kind of a halo around the globe. If you look at Northern Europe, Siberia, Canada, Alaska, that's where aspen trees grow. And then if you take the mountain ranges, which tend to run north and south, those mimic the northern climates because it's colder in a short growing season. And aspen trees are really the only deciduous tree that grows in these places. They take advantage of their thin bark so they can get a jump start. No other deciduous tree can do that. The only trees that can do that are the coniferous trees or the evergreens. They're not doing the jump start, but they've got needles all the time.
Right.
So they don't have to regrow leaves each year. Sorry, that was a lot.
No, we really appreciate it.
We love to learn. My next question will hopefully bring some more learning. So since this article was on the topic of leaf watching, now that the leaves are starting to turn color a little bit, how long can we expect to be able to look at them while they are turned in their color before they start dropping, from a leaf expert?
I think I think we've had the past 2 weeks were great. It was kind of the lead up. Mm-hmm. I think we're right in the middle of the peak in a lot of places. And I think you've got another 2 weeks to really enjoy it in most places in the mountains. Of course, if you, let's say, and I always think going over McClure Pass and going west is always a good way to see the cottonwoods change. Those last even longer down in the valleys here in our towns, in Carbondale, in Basalt, in Aspen, in Glenwood Springs. You can expect that to last another month where we then can't figure out whether we need to take out our snow shovel or our rake as they're all falling down in November.
Right. And as a follow-up to that, while our leaves are around, do you have any tips as to how best to observe those leaves?
Well, I think I like going on a hike. I like going on something that's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when riding up the roads, if that's your thing, I always marvel at the color of the center line. The yellow is the exact same color as the aspen trees, and it seems surreal when you're in the middle of the winter and you see the color. But, like, you can see that from the roads. Of course, not if you're a driver, but, go up the roads. There's beautiful pull-offs on a lot of the roads around here and some of our favorite hikes, whether it's, Thomas Lake up near, up the Frying Pan, up to Crystal, up near Aspen, Castle Creek, Maroon Creek. All those are just incredible places, and my favorite way is to be in them and feel kind of the yellow air that surrounds us when the sun shines through the aspen.
We're so lucky, too, for people who maybe can't, make it out on a hike. Although I agree with you, that's certainly the way I like to do it, get in the midst of those leaves. And but even just driving over the passes right now, it seems like the colors are so vibrant. And so we're so lucky to live in a place, and I suppose within that halo around the globe where the aspens are so beautiful.
Totally.
For listeners, you are tuned into Everything Under the Sun, the Soper Sun's weekly radio program right here on KDNK. Our guest today is Mr. Jim Kravitz with ACES, that is the Aspen Center for Environmental... Sorry. Aspen Center for Environmental...
Studies.
Studies.
We got it. Yeah.
See, and I've been saying it by the acronym since I was in elementary school. I remember going,
he doesn't even
know. And loving it. So, Jim, thank you so much for what you all do there at ACES. And ACES is a nonprofit, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, great. I do want to go back, and the focus of today's conversation is the science behind leaf peeping, and we're reflecting on an article by Jess Peterson on page 11 of this week's Soper Sun. I wanted to go back to something you mentioned earlier, Jim, that I thought that was interesting, is that those colors that we see today, the changed colors, yellow, orange, those are all predetermined. Is that right, for each leaf?
Yes. I think if we are just trying to, certain types of trees will have certain pigments that are associated with them. But some of those pigments that are not chlorophyll, they do have some role in light absorption. And so they're going to be slightly different for different trees. I mean, aspen trees have been studied a lot, and the yellow that's left over is very well known after the chlorophyll and the chloroplast have all broken down. Some people will notice some aspen trees have a reddish or an orangish tint. And, that's sort of similar to having red hair or something. It's a genotype, so that those genes are expressing that red and that type of pigment more than some of the other ones do, or the other ones don't at all. And I think people who look around a lot will notice that the trees that are red this year will have a red tint next year and the year after, and other trees that are yellow won't suddenly turn red-ish. So you'll see those same kind of groupings year after year.
I see. And that's interesting. So you should expect to see some similar patterns each year if you're used to going to the same place.
Yes. The other thing that I think is really interesting is some of the differences in like an aspen grove. We could do a whole thing on aspens, that an aspen grove may be one single individual that has 50 stems. So that means it looks like it's all these different trees, but they're actually the same genetic individual. So every tree within that clone will change at the same time. And you can kind of see this patchwork or a mosaic of aspens as you go to places that have, you know, vast a variety of clones, like up at Maroon Lake and up at Thomas Lake. So you'll see them changing at different times. Some change earlier than others, and they're putting their eggs in the basket of, hey, the frost and the snow is coming. I don't want to have my stems broken by snow, so I got to get rid of these leaves early. So they kind of initiate leaf senescence earlier, and some are later. So it's just different variability within the species.
Do you personally have a favorite color or a type of leaf to watch change this time of year?
Well, I mean, aspen trees for sure. And there's a couple places that occur in a lot of places, actually, that are, I'll be underneath a full canopy of aspen leaves while the sun's shining through, and it really washes the air in just a different color. It's just, you can only get that right now this time of year.
That is fantastic. It is quite, and it seems like they're really, I think we chose the right week for this article, just because it seems like they're peaking right now. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think there's a window every year, and it's usually between the third and fourth week in September. That's when it kicks off, and it's going the best. So yeah, we're in there. I think it is peak.
So as part of your job at ACES, do you get to look into this kind of stuff, like the science behind trees, or what is your kind of day-to-day like at ACES?
Oh, this kind of thing is humbling, because as you go into any subject, just try to take a look into pigments of different trees, and you will get into some chemistry that is, and physics that are so complicated that, and I'm not a chemist or a physicist, I'm just a naturalist, so I observe these things, but to try to really understand them to the deepest level, like people are writing big PhD papers on the smallest little aspects. So it's very humbling, and I like that, but I do on a day-to-day basis get to go down the rabbit hole and find out some of these things, whether it's about bears and their kind of unique reproduction and how they do hibernation, to how trees change. And it's fascinating. That's sort of what I have to do to keep myself humming along. I mean, a lot of what I do is teach and try to show other staff here, books and resources to have them learn all these things so they can talk with the public and talk with children about all these really fascinating things that are in our backyard.
That is fantastic, and it's lucky to have a place as like ACES that's able to spread that education to young people as well as old. Are you able to get into the classroom very often? Or
I don't get into the classroom very often. Adam is fantastic, and just kind of he was interviewed for that article, and it's just really impressive that he and I share this program called Know Your Trees, and we do that every Monday in the summer, where we just teach people about the trees. So I do that kind
That's
of thing,
awesome.
And I lead a couple of other walks, but mostly I'm working mostly with the naturalists and the staff here, and kind of just providing them tools so they can educate so many people.
Well, and it's really fitting because Adam McCurdy, who is also with ACES, again, like Jim just stated, was the source for this story in the Soper Sun, but he can't be here today because he is actually with a class. So,
that's right. He's talking about fire ecology, about this area, which is really important, and with drying forests. So he's really focused on that, and he's up in Hunter Creek. He does other walks up in Lake Christine where there's obviously been a fire, and just looking at our backyard and some of the things that we're facing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is certainly on people's minds every year in the summer times and wildfires. So, yeah. And we know that it takes a lot of different perspectives to solve a problem. So we appreciate that you both are out there helping to address that and to find out more behind it. So a shout out certainly to Adam McCurdy for being the source and for spreading knowledge about our forests. So thank you. And thank you, Jim, for doing that as well. We really appreciate that. Did you get a chance to read the article then, Jim?
I did. Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. I'm so glad. And, well, let's see here. I was going to put our students on the spot actually and see if I'll go first. But I think Jim had mentioned it earlier, so I might be cheating a little bit. But my favorite place to watch the changing seasons is on Thomas Lakes Trail, or the trail going up to Sopris. And when you get to the lakes, it's just absolutely beautiful. What about you, Gus? Do you have place to watch the leaves change?
I do. There is a really nice hill right next to the high school that has all these big trees. It's normally a bike path, but no one really uses it. And it's got this church up on the top of this hill, and it's a very difficult hike up there.
Oh,
but
what?
They've got a bunch of very nice trees all up on there, and it
Fantastic.
Makes for some real pretty scenes. I took some real good pictures there last year.
Nice. And then there's also some green juniper, I think, mixed in
there.
There
is,
would,
yes. Yeah, it's nice.
That'd be a nice balance. I see that. And Gus is quite a photographer, so I could see that interest. Yesenia, how about you? Do you have a favorite place to watch the leaves change?
Yes. In RVER, I'm not really sure what the street is called, but it's close to the Crystal River.
Oh my gosh. Well, there's the lovely riparian, and I feel bad because I don't remember the name of it, but there's like a little riparian kind of park that the town is doing some work at. That is a lovely place. So that's fantastic. Sounds like we all need to get out on some hikes, though. well, again, we appreciate you, Jim, speaking with us so much today. And please give Adam our thanks as well. We're going to take a couple minutes. We have about 3 minutes left. And Cody Lee, the music director here at KD&K, just walked in. So we're going to talk about why we love KD&K, because KD&K is in the midst of its membership drive. Jim, I'm going to put you on the spot though before we let you go. do you tune into KD&K from time to time?
I do. I can listen to it on my smart speaker.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate you listening, and if you're not already a member, you could always become a member at kdnk.org, and that goes for everyone who is listening today. any other thoughts you'd like to provide? And that goes for everyone here, including Cody Lee, who just came into the studio. How are you, Cody?
Oh, fantastic.
Good. Why do you love KD&K besides it?
One reason that I really love KD&K is for collaborating with the Sopra Sun.
And oh, yes! Wow.
This program, Everything Under the Sun, yes. on every week. And if you don't want to give to radio, give to KD&K for sharing the airwaves with our sister organization, the Sopra Sun.
Absolutely.
Right now. Yep. Because it's community-based media, you know, mm-hmm. and it's so important right now. And I love seeing Gus and Yesenia in here every week. And it's kind of like our Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program, that you have these amazing young journalist interns. And, you know, you have more besides Gus and Yesenia.
We do.
Too,
we
right?
have five interns.
Oh
Gus
my
and
gosh.
Yesenia.
We just got two new ones. They're pretty good.
They're great. We have Isaac Sterling, who is a student at CRMS. And mm-hmm. then we also have Jay, who is a student at Coleridge High School.
Oh, that's so
we're
awesome.
Getting some bigger reach.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Wow.
So we feel really lucky, and thank you, Cody, and it's so true. And just to support all the public programming here on KDNK, and all the nonprofits that get to come on to KDNK and share their missions, including the Soapless Sun, and several others. So thank you. And thank you. We always have so much fun being in here every week. Gus and Yesenia, myself, or if I'm not here, then Raleigh is here, the editor-in-chief.
We have fun when this whole crew comes in.
It's always wonderful.
You brighten up the station.
Oh, my goodness.
I normally stay here till like 6:30 talking to somebody here.
It's true. It takes a while to get out the door because it's such a lovely place.
Because we love being here.
And it's
and
so cool.
Yesenia drives home without me, and then I have to walk to the bus.
Well, I'm going to put these two on the spot because I want them to say why they appreciate KDNK. Are we good till 3:30 or?
Well, before.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's 27 now,
okay, so
I'm going to get on it.
Go quickly.
I love KDNK because it feels like a second home to me. There's all the records around, just like at my house, and it's got a lot of nice wood. It's very homey here, and you know everyone here is real nice.
That's
and they let me be Gus Richardson in a way that some other social spaces don't allow for. What do you think, Yesenia?
Why love KDNK?
I love KDNK because it helps me feel more empowered and allows me to have my voice heard, as well as the connections that I've made here, and how strong they are. And I love
that's beautiful. Well, we'll close it out with that. Thank you for staying tuned to KDNK. Thank you, Jim Kravitz, for joining us today. Have a wonderful Thursday,
thanks,
folks.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you,
Jim.
All righty. Have a good afternoon.